Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 34, episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For June 4th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Tag Team Jack again. Check it to wreck it, O'Brien. That is courtesy of T. Murphy. I kind of made a couple revisions, but same general idea from T. Murphy. I'm forced to assume former NBA player Troy Murphy. And I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Miles wants something else. I'm not listening when you gray. Thank you. Yep, there we go. Thank you, Chapman Rice, a.k.a. Goddess. Fun fact, I ran into your buddy, Zach Oyama, who's also a comedian out here in L.A. Some of you probably know him. And we made a weird connection when someone came up to me and said, hey, someone who I think listens to your podcast I went to college with, and it ends up being Chapman Rice. So shout out to you.
Well, that makes us look really small time, because then it seems like we only have like 5 listeners and we know who all of them are.
It's kind of true. We are a second-rate podcast. You know what I mean? And the Zeit Gang is very small.
All right. We are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a first-time guest, I believe.
Yes.
She is the great, one of the all-time greats, Jamie Loftus. The great one of the all-time greats.
Wow. Sorry, but I would love to come on as a first-time guest.
Yeah, every time. Just new character.
Feels like there's a lot going on here.
We have Zamboni girl. What's up, Zamboni girl?
Little Zamboni girl. Hi, guys.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Thank you so much.
I haven't seen you.
I don't have enough time to Google things. I don't know.
I haven't Googled anything in the past couple days.
I haven't had a question in a long time.
Thank you so much for filling in for me while I was out conducting my experiment.
Did you see, Miles, people were speculating that we were hiding Jack like Trump is hiding Melania.
People still don't know. This could be one of those like voice modulator algorithms we created to sound like Jack.
I've been really into AI, and I think I'm getting pretty good at it. So, I mean, let's see how today goes.
You're getting good at AI,
I'm getting good at coding.
Oh, okay. I'm like, what? So how do you define AI?
Zeros.
Getting good at it.
There's zeros, but then also, and a lot of people don't know that this, there's also ones. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've just been doing zeros the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, ever since I upgraded Jackpot's software.
There we go. All right, we're going to get into a bunch of different stuff. We're going to talk about the Kanye album, the Supreme Court decision, about cake. That is currently the biggest font I've seen Drudge use for a headline in our time running this show. We're going to talk about Trump's shamelessness as just an accidental strategy, Bill Clinton's new weird book tour, lots of stuff. But before we get into what the world is thinking about, we like to start out by talking to our guest about what they specifically are talking and thinking about and searching for. Jamie, what are you searching for? Maybe we can broaden it for you. Just what are you searching for in general?
What am I searching for in my life?
Yeah.
I did Google over the weekend several times Zach Woods GQ photo shoot. Have we all seen the Zach Woods GQ photo shoot?
Is he looking like a snack?
I was bedridden over the Zach Woods GQ photo shoot. It is absolutely beautiful. It's just all these pictures of Zach Woods in the woods. He's fishing.
Oh, wow.
He's on various rafts. And I was just like, I'm in full body paralysis over the Zach Woods GQ photo shoot. Highly recommend if you want to get horny
this one
on
with
a Monday.
Him falconing. I mean, wow.
I love that he has resting, weeping face.
Yeah. He really does.
He really does.
Zach
Woods
is the, I forget the character's name from Silicon Valley.
Jared.
Yeah. From Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
One of the funniest dudes.
He's the absolute best. And And
do you have a crush on Zach Woods?
Dude, I don't even know. I think I just want to like hang out with him. He just seems like a good person to hang out with.
Just sort of based off his like sort of low energy kind of, I don't know.
I feel like he's one of those people that you'd talk to. He like knows a lot about very specific things.
Right.
Yeah.
Like y'all would have a crazy conversation about a Zamboni, and I would believe it.
I feel like he knows a lot about things I don't know, and then I could tell him all about the history of Chuck E. Cheese.
Right.
Yeah, which no one knows except me.
Oh, wow.
I am the keeper of the keys.
Right.
And then the other thing I've been looking up, because speaking of Chuck E. Cheese's, I was getting back into Aaron Fechter's YouTube channel over the weekend, and Aaron Fechter is the inventor of the Chuck E. Cheese robots. He still lives in the warehouse he created those robots in Florida. He's the only person who lives there now.
Oh, no.
He lives there with his wife, and he programs the robots to sing songs about his wife. It is terrifying and beautiful, and I recommend everyone look into his weird YouTube channel for robots.
And what, did he just like make a quick check when he created the Chuck E. Cheese band, like mechanical band, and then just it was dead? Downfall after that?
It goes so deep. He has such, like, he's the classic, like, genius who cannot do business kind of guy, because he invented whack-a-mole, straight up slipped, forgot to get the patent.
He invented whack-a-mole?
He invented whack-a-mole. Didn't get the patent on whack-a-mole, blew it, got, like, swindled by a carny who ended up getting the patent to whack-a-mole. He blew it. Then he's like, okay, let me just invent every animatronic robot at Chuck E. Cheese. Slipped again, like just totally like blew his load and went wrecked that business as well. Used to have like 300 employees in this huge warehouse in Florida, and then like the business folded, but he still has the warehouse and
it's
the
so
robots.
Because that the Chuck E. Cheese robots like really is, you know, part of my like childhood and like growing up there. And even like I remember when people started like doing like sort of like robot dancing challenges, a lot of people's like inspiration point was the Chuck E. Cheese.
The Chuck E. Cheese robots,
Yeah.
Damn. Well,
so and check out his YouTube channel, though. He is still programming those bots.
I have a suggestion for his next career is just have like a Halloween haunted house where he just like takes very specific parts of the fur off. So it's just like the robot face or like half a robot face.
That's full like Five Nights at Freddy's.
Right. Yeah.
Just help us.
Jamie, what is something that's overrated?
Overrated. Oh, have either of you read this book, The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield?
No.
It is like a book that was recommended to me several times in the past week. It's one of those like self-help, like you're going to be the greatest writer in the world if you read this book. I would expand this overrated to 80% of self-help books written by men, because it is it is like the most aggro self-help book I've ever read in my life.
It's like, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Totally.
You
yeah,
don't
like,
want this?
Basically all caps in a serif font, 18, two-inch margins. And like people I love and respect were like, you gotta read it. And then it was written in 02 as well. So Stephen Pressfield's like, you know what? Like,
9/11 got me thinking.
Seriously. He has a lot of takes on 9/11. Like right after it happened, he said that the Holocaust was a result of procrastination. He says a lot.
Oh, wow.
He said that Lance Armstrong was like the pantheon of discipline and success because it was 2002.
Right. Yeah.
He said that Tiger Woods had great discipline in his personal and professional life. He just says all sorts of stuff. He's like, mental illness is caused by you not doing your art. And he's like, people who get cancer are just procrastinating on being a genius. And my favorite part
Really?
Yeah.
And cancer is caused by like blocked artistic
aspirations. Cancer and the Holocaust were caused by people just procrastinating. And then you're
because Hitler was like a blocked artist? Or?
Yeah. And he gets really cute about it. He's like, listen, this is just my take, but maybe if Hitler had stopped procrastinating on that painting, the Holocaust wouldn't have freaking happened.
Asshole.
He's terrible. And then you're like, wait, what are his qualifications? And this is the best.
Yeah, right.
His biggest success was he wrote The Legend of Bagger Vance. That's it. This
really?
Another fucker wrote the racist golf movie, The Legend of Bagger Vance.
Wow.
Cool.
I spent $14 on that pile of garbage. I'm so mad.
Oh, who is recommending this to you?
People I love. And then I like.
Like family?
No.
It seems like a family recommendation.
No, like a director I work with all the time was like, I read this book and it stressed me out, but I think that that probably is a good thing.
Huh.
An illustrator that I work with a lot, if you see this book or this book is recommended to you, it is a crock of shit. It's really bad.
Amazing.
Have you read The Artist's Way?
I haven't, no.
Oh, okay. That's written by a woman, and it... Have you ever heard of like people doing morning pages where they like write freehand for 3 pages every morning just to like, so that's an exercise from that book.
Gotcha.
And it's actually, I don't know. I think it's a pretty decent book.
That doesn't sound like the worst thing at all.
Yeah, it's not aggressive and like get
right.
You know.
I'm all for people like wanting to better themselves, but I right. it like went from like you should write more to Holocaust conspiracy theory very quickly.
Right. It's like, what is this book about?
The world wants to stop your art.
Yeah, is this like
you
some
need
weird
to fucking
manifesto?
Blast it out there.
Yeah, he's like, if you're not up at 4 a.m. writing your racist golf movie, you are scum.
You should try the 48 Laws of Power. That might,
oh, yeah, that's another good one. God. That's worth reading so, because then you can, like, see other people trying to use
yeah,
them.
Yeah,
on
you're,
your,
you're like, yeah, damn, yeah. You are so, you're so whack.
Hey, this is Anna. I just want to let you guys know how I was raised. My father gave me the 48 Laws of Power when I was 10 years old.
Oh, my God.
I'm not even joking. I have the book to this day on my bookshelf and told me to read it and learn from it.
It's really interesting because that book had a sort of cultural, like, peak where everything came together in the early 2000s, like Dov Charney was like,
yeah.
This is the atheist's Bible, 48 Laws of Power. And also 50 Cent
yeah.
was like all about it and like claimed that it like taught him his success. And then like all those people have like fallen off and like become monsters.
Also, I want to say my dad also had a page of it photocopied and printed out and on his wall in his office. So growing up, I'd always see the thing about how you take credit for other people's work. And one of his employees told me that he was scared of my father because of it. That's a real thing that happened in my life growing
up. Oh my
God.
Yeah. No, it's a book about that encourages you to fuck people over.
Oh, yeah.
The 48 Laws of Power.
Well,
for
yeah.
people
well,
who haven't
that
read it.
And like how to win friends and influence people is part of like I worked at a bookstore when I first moved
yeah.
here, and it's just part of like the LA fuckboy starter pack.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
it exactly. really was. Like it was like that the fat Jew book.
Right,
like,
right.
So, oh God, it's terrible. The last thing I'll say about The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, the worst book ever written, is that he like you know he's like reject all critics. Anyone who criticizes you is jealous of you. Amazing. He uses this example of like. If your wife is 8 months pregnant and is saying you're focusing on your art too much, she's wrong.
Right.
And then he was like, think about it. Leo Tolstoy had 13 kids and he wrote War and Peace. I was like, anyone can have 13 kids. Did they? Like, he was, oh, it made me so mad.
And as somebody who has worked in sort of encouraging other creative people mm-hmm. like I think you and I have both this is a very dangerous message to put out there because there
right.
are a lot of people who want to be creatives and to the detriment of the rest of their life who like take it the wrong way
right.
and get into it for the wrong reasons and a message like that can be really really toxic.
I'm all for self-discipline, but it's
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
if especially like you can't be creative unless you're also having a life and have things to pull
absolutely.
From.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Don't ignore your 8 months pregnant wife, guys.
Stephen Pressfield, chode.
I'm surprised he just wasn't like, yeah, your 8 month wife, 8 month pregnant wife, she's a hater.
Right.
Pick her up by the head and put her in the trash. Like, you're just like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Jamie, what's something that's underrated?
Oh, this I'm very excited about.
Nice.
There is a show on Adult Swim right now called Joe Pera Talks to You. And
you already done this one.
I love this one. No, yeah. Last night's episode is like one of my favorite things I've ever seen ever. I won't spoil it, but it's about the character hears Baba O'Reilly for the first time, and that is
the whole episode.
It's really, really good. Yeah, I think it's called, Joe Pera Reads the Church Announcements, so everyone should watch it.
Uh-huh. So I think you have recommended this before,
yeah.
and then... people started recommending it to me in my Twitter mentions.
Right.
So it's.
Wow.
But it's almost like, bro, we've already been on this because of Yami Lofty.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Also, then we started talking about because Connor O'Malley, I think, does he write on it? Or is he in it?
I think both.
Hilarious comedian. If you guys can find
him,
go look at Connor O'Malley's old Vine videos if you want to see some wild, crazy New York shit.
Yeah. Maybe Brian's husband.
Yeah.
And just one of the funniest dudes. All right, and finally, what's a myth? What's something people think is true that you know based on your personal experience is not?
This is, okay, so this weekend, okay, so I would say this myth is that you should talk about things that upset you in a public place. But I think this is true. I was with a friend from college this weekend. We went to Denny's, and I was talking about...
the most public of places.
Yes.
The most public. We were fully in the Atwater Denny's, getting into the thick of it.
Right.
Hadn't caught up in a while. and we like gone on to this, like I was basically just like talking with her about one of the worst things that had ever happened to me. And it was like kind of an emotional conversation, and we were talking and drinking coffee, and then all of a sudden Who Let the Dogs Out came on full blast in the restaurant.
That's amazing.
And we just like looked at each other like, we have to stop talking. Right. This conversation is over.
It's inappropriate with this music on.
And I was like, I think I'm actually over it now. So, talk about your past traumas in Denny's, I think is my Tealing. Recommendation. Okay. Yeah, because their radio is wild.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just have to have that be a preloaded sound drop we do when people start getting really in like dark shit. Then suddenly we Nick, hit it. Who let the dogs out? Guys, I was just talking about my... anyway.
You're like, I was talking about how my father left. Right. And they're just like,
who let your dad out? All right. Okay. We should have remixed it.
By the way, the guy who wrote that song credits the 48 Laws of Power for giving him the inspiration. No, I don't.
I'd be surprised because like nearly everybody in hip-hop, including Kanye and Jay-Z, Drake, everybody.
Hey, speaking of hip-hop and Kanye... he released an album last week. Let's get into what people are thinking and talking about right now. And the Kanye album, I think you guys touched on a little bit on Friday. We've had a weekend to listen to it. And I think, I don't know, my overall takeaway is that it's very uneven and probably the worst thing he's ever done. But it also has really high highs like a lot of his projects do. I really like the first song. The second and third are solid. I really like Ghost Town. The song to his daughter about like how he doesn't want her to be hot is the worst thing he's ever done. It's like the rap version of one of those Matt Damon quotes that starts out, as a father of daughters, I understand, crossed with one of those purity ball events in the South where daughters promise their chastity to their fathers, which is...
Is that the thing? Like, it almost looks like a wedding ceremony, it is, right? Yeah. Like, the father and daughter, like proclaim
it's
to each
weird.
Other.
Weird.
That's how bad the song is. Is it reminded me of that, and then I just went on a deep dive on like Wikipedia on the chastity ball and or purity ball rather. It's really like it's reality's version of American Pie, in that it seems like it's from 5 generations ago, but it was fairly recent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I
guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
What did you find in your
deep
dive? Of the
bring us down the Wikipedia hole.
Let me know about the purity ball.
There's just this incredible
like
article.
Not a Pokeball.
Where it's like, you know, this gray-haired guy sitting next to, they just describe her as like a woman in a floor-length gown with her hair in an updo. It like seems like a wedding for all intents and purposes. He pulls out a ring and like shows it to her, and she starts crying.
Yeah, have you never seen
and
these
then,
videos?
Yeah. Oh, and then they're like, yeah, and that daughter is 17 years old. And that is his daughter. And they dance together, and it's all sorts of weird and like awkwardly romantic in a way that, I don't know, it's just totally unself-conscious about how creepy it is.
Right, because they're just claiming protectorship over their daughter's body.
Yeah, and it also has the sort of the war of art vibe where it's like they declare war on things that shouldn't be possible to declare war on. There's a quote from this article. Pastor Randy Wilson takes the microphone and asks the men, are you ready to war for your daughter's purity?
You ready to kill for your daughter's hymen?
Yeah.
You're like, never mind that she probably broke it on a bike seat when she was younger.
That's a lie. She says that it's a lie. You find the man, you kill him.
The purity ball guidelines suggest that the daughters be just old enough to have begun menstruating. Cool. Something that everyone should.
Well, yeah, because those Kanye lyrics really are kind of like, whoa, man, now that I think about my own daughter, like, men do some gross stuff. And then like other songs are like about him fucking other people besides his wife. And you're
we should just do a universal like kibosh on men being allowed to be like, as a father of daughters, I understand women.
Right.
Like, I was on the phone with my dad the other night, and we were sparring about Sam B using the C word.
Uh-huh.
And my dad was like, I don't know. I mean, as your father, I think that it's a pretty vile word. And then in the middle, he's like, oh, my teeth fell out. I was like, your opinion is invalid on this matter. Your teeth literally fell out while you were saying, I don't think people should use the C word.
Click, 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 click.
Click, click, click,
click. Click, 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 click.
There is something about that because Rudy Giuliani, his teeth always seem on the verge of falling out. I feel like there's something about conservative politics and like your teeth just wanting to escape from your head.
I don't know.
My dad loses his teeth everywhere. It's very funny.
Isn't it a hockey thing?
It is a hockey thing to lose your teeth.
Right. But your dad wasn't a hockey.
But my dad doesn't play hockey. He just reports about it, which shouldn't. So yeah, it's on him. But the other day, he's like, you know, I lost my teeth and they were on top of my Elvis Costello CD collection. It's
like, which stacks so high that you can't see it without a ladder.
Most dad shit ever.
Love it.
All right. Back to Kanye. So apparently the album was created like fully, none of these songs existed before that TMZ interview.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
And
that's according to people who have reported on the process. It was all like put together very quickly, which the thing that used to separate his work from a lot of other people's work is what a perfectionist he is. And this sounds rushed and not that well thought through. And even the Pusha T album that he produced, like, sounded, it was seven tracks that you got the sense it was like they took the seven best tracks from like a collection of 15 and we're just making it all killer, no filler. Whereas this just seems like the first seven tracks of a bad Kanye album or something.
It's very first drafty.
Yeah. You know, we knew something was wrong with him.
Yes.
Based on his public appearances over the last couple months. And the album just kind of further shows that he's not in the best place, especially to be creating. And he's still saying the dumbest shit out loud on record. And I've never come at the guy's music. But this is like one of the first times I really feel sort of a little bummed for him as a creator. I'm like, damn, you really just, this sounds so all over the place. The first song I actually really like a lot, but it goes all over the place from like silently being like, what? I thought about killing you to.
Like, you were saying earlier that,
like a dude on the bus or something saying some crazy shit like, I thought about killing you, premeditated murder. And you're like, God damn. Man. Call CPS. Because also, who the fuck is he talking about when he's like, I thought about killing you? Best believe that.
I think that's been speculated. I assumed it was Kim, but
I've heard stuff like that said on the bus to the Glendale Galleria before.
You never want to start off with something about, I thought about premeditated murder into like impromptu humming.
Right.
But that song, like, it feels like two songs that could have been good and then just were kind of all over the place. Because then suddenly he's like, yeah, like I've been in some bad places using the floor as ashtray. And he's like, it's a different set of rules that we obey. You're like, whoa, this is the same song? Okay.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah,
I don't know. Anyway, it's one of those things. I'll maybe can only listen to like three of the songs on there, but
I don't know.
I feel like he had a chance to maybe do something slightly redeemable off the back of all that dumb shit that he said, and then he really does nothing to address that. Even when he talks about the slavery was a choice thing, it's just sort of like, yo, I told Kim she could have left, but she didn't, so she's loyal.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's like the worst thing he could have done. It just kind of is just like a weird, like, lateral. Yeah.
It's a nothing.
I
just want to shout out all my bipolar heads again, because I don't know, like, he makes a big deal about his mental illness on this album. That's mostly what it's about, and you can sort of like hear that thought process. And I don't know, it's weird to hear someone in the thick of it making, you know, releasing their first draft, basically.
Right.
I'm interested in how that like affects the mental health conversation, if at all. But more than anything, it's like the way you see people responding to this album, who were like 2 weeks ago they were like, he's dead to me. Mm-hmm. No, he's canceled. He's done. Now they're like, track two is actually pretty good.
I'm guilty of that to an extent.
That's my jackpot program.
I mean, my beefs with him have always been about his politics or what he does with his celebrity, basically.
Yeah.
Because I always said that even the thick of his dumb fuckery is that like it. That's why I was so upset, because he has made like an album that I feel is one of the better hip hop albums that's ever been made, and
Jesus.
So. No, fuck Yeezus. That is a fucking trash pile.
I like Yeezus, but Miles hates Yeezus.
Yeah, and again, but it's one of those things, too, where it shows how invested people can be when they're like, well, but I also got to find out. But at the end of the day, this just further underlines how little he knows about his own place or the world or whatever, because it comes off so odd and like just tone deaf in spots that I'm just was really like, ugh. That's why, to me, it was just kind of like, I don't know, a lot of people on Twitter were like, yo, this is the greatest album, or other people like, this is the greatest, this is the worst fucking album, fuck you, and people were like getting upset over it. To me, I'm just sort of like, he made this album in a week, and he literally got flamed on TMZ, and his response is this, and it sounds like just sort of like this impulsive thing that he did. So I don't know. Is he going to want to count this as one of his albums?
Yeah, and I mean, none of the 7 songs apparently existed back when he gave himself this self-imposed deadline to release the album last week. And then apparently he told Charlamagne in an interview that he completely reworked the songs after that TMZ slavery was a choice thing.
Wow. So not only was like, last minute album, like last minute, do your homework.
Right, just thrown together.
Yeah, all right. Well, sounds like that.
There's this one point he makes where he refers to himself in the third person, and then from that transitions into being able to like see outside of himself and therefore being bipolar as a superpower, which
I didn't take it like that.
You didn't take that?
I didn't know if it
saying?
Was that he was seeing outside of himself. It was just sort of like, I think he called out his own narcissism in a way. He was clearly like, maybe someone in therapy was like, you see how you tend to do third person, your narcissism,
right?
Because he's like, blah. I was like, see, that's that third person. He's like, wait, I heard that's my bipolar shit. I'm a fucking superhero.
That's me trying to track his thought process, which probably doesn't make sense.
I mean, what do you think of him thinking, looking at his bipolar disorder as a superpower?
I don't speak on behalf of.
No, I mean, just personally, how does that strike you? I mean,
it just seems a little bit like off, and that makes sense if you're in the middle of a bipolar manic episode that you would see things off. That's like what they're characterized by. But I don't know. I just, it bums me out a little bit that this is like, well, he's acting this way because he's bipolar. It just, I think, kind of oversimplifies a more complicated illness, and basically just characterizes anyone who does have bipolar disease as like someone who's completely unhinged and can, and just using the bipolar to justify stuff he says in the media of like, yo, being bipolar has never made me think that slavery was a choice. Right. Like there's other stuff at play and there's like more context, and the fact that it's being boiled down to like, well, he's going through a bipolar manic episode, that seems like it's true, but there's also like other stuff going on.
Yeah, much more complex.
Yes.
Clearly.
And just from a public persona perspective, it seems like the parts of him that have always like kind of captured people who don't care about his art's attention, like his sort of rambling, you know, jumping on stage at award shows and just basically, you know, toxic narcissism, like that person is eating like the creator on this album. You can almost hear that happening.
Yeah. And I think the lack of like, at least I haven't looked at all the credits, but it seems like not many people were helping him with the songwriting part. And that's always like a mark of most of his albums.
Yeah. I mean, anything that's that rushed is going to be hard to.
Like this second rate podcast.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's right. All right.
We still bring the heat.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and it is time to talk about that Supreme Court decision. 7-2, it was a rout for the conservative side on this decision that people have been talking about for years, where a baker in Colorado decided to not bake a cake for a gay couple's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Civil Liberties Department, or Colorado Civil Rights Commission, basically told him he wasn't allowed to make that decision. So, like I said, Drudge is treating this as a huge victory for conservative politics,
right?
Just conservative thought in general.
Yeah, and it's not really the case here. I mean, if you really like look at it, because like the first thing that was going, like as you say, 7-2, a lot of people like on super right wing Twitter were like, "Oh, that's a blowout," because a lot of people, like when they look at the New York Times or Washington Post, they say it was a narrow decision, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. These people are like, 7-2 is not narrow, my guy. But they're not thinking in terms of how you describe a decision as being narrow or broad.
In its application.
Yes. And
narrow
in this case,
in its application.
It is very narrow because it applies to this one instance. And so to like, you know, be blowing up your LGBT rainbow cakes on your masthead for your website, it doesn't quite relate to what's actually happening with this case.
So the Drudge headline that's in the huge font is Supremes, which is what we're calling
full
the Supreme
word
Court
art.
Anymore.
Full word art, yeah.
Supremes, colon, you don't have to bake that cake. And then a big picture of a rainbow cake. Which it's weird because when you click through on that article, it makes it clear that the you in that headline is literally a single individual human being. That's what they're saying,
Jack
is
Phillips.
That this one person didn't have to bake the cake because of the way the Colorado Civil Rights Commission worded their admonition of him.
Right.
They were too strong in their wording, and it did, you know, strike the seven of the Supreme Court justices as implying sort of condemnation of his religious beliefs.
Yeah,
it's like a semantic thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and Justice Kennedy in his ruling, like he writes that specifically what they did in Colorado, like that's exactly what they're overturning. It's like based on their handling of it, that's why we're saying he's allowed to do whatever he wants, because they sort of weaponized his religion against him. Because in the ruling made in Colorado, they're like, you know, they were sort of using the thing of like religious freedom has been done in the name of all kinds of horrible things and blah, blah, blah. And in that ruling, they said, and to that judge who was making the ruling, was, quote, one of the most despicable pieces of rhetoric that people can use. And that's what Kennedy kind of went on to, is like to describe their faith as despicable rhetoric. You know, that's like to disparage his religion and therefore blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those rulings where everyone kind of takes something home. Where people, if you're on the anti-LGBT side, you're going to be like, you see, yeah, he was able to do that. That doesn't mean everybody who wants to discriminate can do that. That's a whole other thing that will probably end up in the Supreme Court eventually. But also, you know, this isn't exactly a blow to LGBT rights either, even though seemingly on the surface it feels like that. You know, Kennedy's opinion also shows ways that states can enforce LGBTQ non-discrimination laws without bumping into the constitutional free speech kinds of things that was what created this whole situation. I think a lot of people are going to take what they want to, especially, you know, as, you know, culture wars in full swing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, obviously we all wish it had gone the other way, but it does seem like a case of wording.
Yeah. Well, that's why there are a lot of articles written. They're like, hi, this applies literally to this one person.
This one man who, 6 years ago, too. This is like a 2012 originally was the cake request, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this is how long it took. And I don't think they want to hear another case like this for a minute.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, the other thing is Kennedy did reassert sort of the dignity that, you know, gay people should be treated with and all these other things. I know in Justice Ginsburg's notes in her dissent, she was just kind of talking about the line of reasoning that was being used is a little bit different, because really these two people were being turned away because of their identity, not because of a message that they wanted to put on the cake, because they're like sort of on the facts of it. They were talking about the messaging that would be on the cake or whatever. So it's, again, it was like one of those decisions that luckily not broad, but kind of leaves everybody wanting a little bit more to know, like where are we really going to fall on this?
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I think there is maybe this creeping narrative on the conservative side that they are riding a groundswell of Trump's got this North Korea thing going, and now we've got this win in the Supreme Court. So I think this is tying into a broader overall narrative. So if you click through the headline that Drudge has there, implying that the group, the Supremes, have said something about baking that cake, the article is an AP article that specifically says in one of the, you know, first 10 paragraphs, but the justices did not issue a definitive ruling on the circumstances under which people can seek exemptions from anti-discrimination laws, and other like sort of important claims raised in the case were completely left alone. So they basically just ruled on a single individual case.
Yeah.
They just Judge Judy'd it. They were just like, in this individual case, we find for the...
Well, I feel like Judge Judy would, I think, handled it a little bit better. She'd be like, you're an idiot!
Diana Ross would have made the cake.
Yes.
Diana Ross would have made the cake.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, no. She would let the other people do it, and then in the background credit, because we all know Diana Ross was the least talented singer. Oh, it's true. Her singing voice was not as good as the rest of the group of the Supremes. That doesn't mean she wasn't a great front person, but if we're talking purely off quality of voice, I mean, look.
Damn.
Don't at me.
Just
please don't.
Burying wow. that fire take.
Monday
like right
morning.
Here in the middle.
Yeah, well,
Act
look.
Two.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Coming in hot.
All right. Now, I want to talk about this sort of narrative of Trump being on a winning streak. People are saying that his popularity is surging because it's up, I think, 2 percentage points into the low 40s, which is good for him.
Hey, low 40s are the
30s for so long.
Are the new high 60s, baby. 60s.
Exactly. I do want to talk about something that I think is powering this. I don't want to get into that narrative of Trump is great at his job. I do think that there's a way in which he sucks at his job that is actually making it possible for him to have those wins. And that is just complete and utter shamelessness. And the thing that crystallized this for me was the North Korea meeting and the sending of the letter, and where he came out strong. The meeting wasn't happening. We're calling it off because you've mistreated us. And then immediately was willing to completely backtrack on that, which seems weird, but I also think it's worth noting that there's not a single president we've ever had, I don't think, who would be shameless enough to do that, to
right.
just, you know, be like that inconsistent.
Put your foot down and be like, okay.
Yeah.
Like
just there's no logic, there's no reasoning, there's nothing, there's no idea that he has to be this solid leader. He's just whatever at the moment grabs him.
It's like playing out like an iMessages thread between him and Kim Jong-un.
Right, exactly.
Like, fuck you, don't come. I don't want to see your ass. And he's like, I'm sorry, baby. Okay, well then, June 12th?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, and this could go either way. Like, yeah, it's like a relationship between two like 19-year-olds.
Yeah.
Who are,
and maybe that's why it works.
It's reality television.
If anything, I feel like this, the only possible positive spin on this is that the people around Trump are getting better at leveraging his weaknesses
right.
to make something good happen.
Right, right.
It has nothing to do with him as an individual. He's
no,
still
right.
a fucking loser.
Right, for sure.
But I don't know. Do you think, can you call the North Korea summit a win at all at any point? Because
yeah.
I honestly, North Korea wins a lot more just by even getting this summit than we do.
Yeah.
You know, sure, maybe three prisoners were like released. Mm. But aside from that, like, you know, there's a lot that North Korea gains, especially Kim Jong-un gains in the propaganda wars, that he has not been able to be seen legitimately, like, you know, by other powers, because he hasn't met with like real world leaders because
right.
they won't do it. And for him to get this opportunity, like, yo, that picture's going to be on like on fucking T-shirts already. Like, they love the envelope that he was holding when like the ex-spy chief of North Korea came to hand deliver that letter to Trump over the weekend.
What a weird photograph.
Yeah.
It looked like it was photoshopped to make the envelope huge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
His hand's tiny.
His face
in
was
a way,
very strange.
That could be genius trolling from North Korea, too. They're like, yo, get the biggest fucking envelope we can get.
There's...
And then get the photo of him holding it. So right. it looks, his hands look wild.
It's very uncanny valley. There's
right.
a Polar Express quality to that.
It really looks like it could have been designed by your guy from who designed the Chuck E. Cheese. Like, he could be in the Hall of Presidents.
Shout
like,
out, Fector.
Yeah. That's a fair point. And a lot of this sort of surging and, you know, Trump being seen in a slightly more favorable light could easily just be that the mainstream media narrative of, holy shit, this guy is constantly fucking up and such a total fuck up, has just become exhausting. We knew that was going to happen eventually, that the mainstream media was going to be like, nobody wants to hear about him screwing up anymore. People
right.
people are in the mood for optimism.
So what, do
you
want to pretend? Oh, like
yeah.
he totally fucked up and so good that we're in a war. I don't know how at that point what you do. I mean,
yeah.
you got to keep the pressure on him, and people have to remember how bad he is, because for exactly the reason that people become like apathy will set in. And then this will become totally normal. And next thing you know, we have even more white supremacist Nazi fucking candidates running
right.
for office. And people want to put them on CNN. Like,
yeah,
yeah, let's hear this guy out. He says African-Americans have IQs 20 points lower. Get the fuck out. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I guess
keep the pressure up.
My only thought with the North Korea thing is that the difference between now and in the past is that they do have intercontinental ballistic missiles that can potentially reach America now. And I think other presidents may have been more in keeping with general military strategies of like being hardline and maybe not meeting with him. And he's just so fucking thirsty for a win and
right.
shameless that he will call off the meeting and then be like, no, I never called off the meeting. You called off the meeting.
right.
You're an idiot. You're lying. Moving on. And another shameless thing that he's doing that I definitely don't think is seen as a win, but it just is another example of just staggering shamelessness is he and his lawyers are laying the groundwork for him to pardon himself.
It's crazy, though, too. Like, they're like, well, he is the embodiment of the law. Therefore, he cannot obstruct it to be. It's really.
And you know that's going to be like an event.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When
yeah.
he pardons himself. I yeah. hope he pardons himself as if he is a turkey.
On Thanksgiving.
Just holds a smaller version of himself yeah. and he's like, it's okay.
Or like normally when he pardons a turkey, he's like, and today I will pardon myself, President Donald Trump. Really? Ha ha ha. I am God.
Yeah, yes. But so it's if we approach it like the turkey, it's like, okay, we pardon you, but it's still okay for you to be killed and eaten for dead.
Right.
This way they talk about like their logic about him basically saying, well, I can't obstruct because I am the law, is saying, quote, the Constitution leaves no question that the president has executive authority over the ultimate conduct and disposition of all criminal investigations and over those executive branch officials responsible for conducting those investigations. Thus, as set forth more fully below, as a matter of law and common sense, the president cannot obstruct himself or subordinates acting on his behalf. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And a lot of the shamelessness is just him knowing that he has a portion of the population that will support him no matter what because yeah. racism.
Well, also people who are like, the fucking Constitution, man, the Constitution. Yeah, if yeah. you read that shit, you would understand that this is basically the antithesis of what the people were trying to do when they wrote the Constitution.
It's- yeah.
Yeah, and also just laws of human society, like the Pope can't even pardon himself, no kings. Like so many, throughout the history of the world, so many kings have been deposed and like beheaded. And,
right.
You know, that's just not a thing you ever give even people with absolute authority the power to do. Like you can't just be like, and I hereby treat myself as the convict in question and give myself an excuse. It just doesn't.
This is just like more high level trolling. Like what?
That and just, it shows you, I mean, it's heating up. This is clearly, you don't have to start talking like this. You know, you're trying to inoculate your base into being like, hey, I'm just letting y'all know when I do this and people act like I can't do it, you can point to this letter saying why I pardoned myself because things look increasingly more and more difficult for him.
Sounds like democracy to me.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, yeah, I think many people, like, people have always said throughout this whole thing, none of his actions are the actions of an innocent person. And I don't think anyone has any question that there's some kind of shit went down. We don't know to what extent, but this just smacks of just guilt and
right.
doing whatever you have to avoid responsibility.
If you had any self-awareness about whether or gave a shit whether you appeared guilty or innocent, you would not even broach the subject yeah. of pardoning yourself. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, Giuliani on the Sunday shows yesterday was like, and he would probably be immediately impeached, so we're not even raising the issue of that. But he could.
What?
But he could if he wanted.
That's
if he
so
wanted
funny. Because
like randomly,
he's still trying to like play the reason card where it's yeah. like, of course he wouldn't, because that would upend the Constitution, a full blown constitutional crisis.
But he could if he wanted to.
But he could if he
but
wanted
like...
to.
Do you guys think you said high level trolling? I had this specific thought when I was listening to you guys last week talk about the Melania thing. Do you think there's anyone in that organization who is sort of programming the mainstream media and social media to focus on these other like stupid bullshit problems? And because the Melania thing is so weird and so specific, like that she's not appearing in the media. And then they put out that statement where it was clearly written by Trump and it was almost intentionally, seems like it could have been intentionally suspicious. Mm. Do you think there's any chance that they're just doing this to, you know, force the opposition to burn calories?
I don't know.
I think that there's something to that. I don't know. It's hard to think too hard about that without going down like a conspiracy rabbit hole.
Right.
But I mean, this White House, I mean, most White House, but like this White House in particular is definitely good at the misdirect of being like, hey, like, and they don't mind because Trump is such a fucking idiot. Like, they don't mind selling him out and making him look like an idiot
right.
to distract from something actually sinister that is happening.
Right.
Yeah, but also just the Melania thing just sort of played out in a very organic way. It's like we haven't seen her in a long time. Like,
I think they're straight up plagiarizing Shelley Miscavige. They're just like right. they're like, yo, this turned some heads back in the day. Maybe we could do a hot.
In my mind, I really just think she is like burning out. trying to like deal with all that shit. I don't know. I feel like there's also a version where she just doesn't, was like, Melania, will you come out to this? And he's like, no.
Right.
Not going anywhere anymore.
I cannot today.
Yeah. And then it's just sort of like after like weeks, you're like, damn, she hasn't showed up anywhere. And then people start speculating and then there's response. I don't know if they're like, okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to stay in the shadows. You're going to be in the cut for 5 weeks. And then people can be like, where's Melania? And then we can use that to cause a distraction.
Yeah.
I think there's so many other ways to do
it. Around in a disguise. Like when Bono got into that bike accident and they found out that Bono travels around New York dressed as a rabbi. Do you remember that story?
Wait, no, what?
He got into like a near fatal biking accident and they were like, weird, this rabbi who got in this biking accident as they were putting him in the ambulance has a fake beard on and this is a disguise, and they pulled it off and it was right. Bono from U2.
Oh my God.
And he was like, yeah, this is how I get around like without being mobbed by people.
He's like, yeah, where are you staying? On Broadway and East Catarse Street.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. And Bono's people, by the way, are denying that he was actually dressed.
Yeah, they just got back to us. That was quick.
Yeah. So they were really on that. They did not want that going around.
You're welcome for texting Bono.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
I got Bono's number.
Well, I think everyone does if you have an iPhone.
Yeah.
It's preloaded on there. Hey, talk to Bono, man. He ain't doing shit except for dressing like a Hasidic Jew and crashing his bike.
He was in a disguise of some sort. They're just denying that it was anything religiously offensive.
But that was because you're saying the Edge joked that it was, and then they had to be like, oh, no. I mean, easy Edge.
Right.
That's a joke.
Two on the Edge, yeah.
Do you think they get to call him Edge, or do you think it's always easy the Edge?
The Edge. I mean, fuck you. If you're going to bother yourself to have the in front of it, you better be letting people call it the Edge.
Enforcing the.
Like if you see The Weeknd, you'd be like, what's up, The Weeknd?
Right.
Yeah, you can't be just like, what's
a weekend? That would be weird.
What's the Edge's real name?
I'm going to look that up.
David Howell Evans. Yeah, David Evans. The Edge would work for you.
He wrote a song on the Spider-Man musical. I don't know why I know that.
Oh, did he?
The Edge, yeah.
Well, I thought most of the music was written by U2.
Oh, well, the Edge got his own song.
Wow.
Is the Edge the Ringo of U2?
No. No, the Edge is the Lennon or McCartney of U2.
Oh, I don't care about
sort of. I don't know anything about their process. I just think, like, in terms of public perception, he's the second most famous.
Yeah, I don't even know anybody. I only know Bono and the Edge.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is everybody else? I don't know. I could be a bad U2 fan.
Speaking of celebrities going around in disguises, you guys. There's this new Bill Clinton novel that he co-wrote with James Patterson. And he's going on book tour talking about that shit.
Which is so crazy because when I first started hearing about it, I was like, oh, he wrote a biography. And then you're like, this is fiction?
Yes, this is fiction.
Cool, Bill Clinton.
It is about a fictional president who is a war hero whose wife dies immediately.
This is horrible.
Because of his super cum.
Right. This is worse than George W.'s paintings.
Yes.
Oh, 100%.
And her dying words are, promise me, you'll meet someone else, Jonathan.
Oh,
promise
no.
Me.
Are you for real?
Yeah,
no.
For real. She was a brilliant
Jesus
law student when
Christ.
She met Duncan. His name Duncan. Is so fucking bad. It
is,
is
it?
Jonathan Lincoln Duncan.
Lincoln Duncan?
This is just totally, like, ruining my impression
Tootin'
of him
smoking
as
smoking Lincoln Duncan.
I think that's Bill Clinton. Like, I personally view myself to be Duncan on Lincoln. And get Lincoln Duncan, so they're not on to me.
But he wouldn't realize that. I feel like that's probably accurate, but he doesn't have the access to his own... I don't know. He doesn't seem self-aware in the writing of this book. Because
not based on the story, either.
This guy's just... So one of the things he does, it's the book is called The President's Missing, and there's some shit going down, and he decides he can't just stand by. So he goes out to his friend, a beautiful Hollywood actress, and she gives him a disguise that he wears around. No.
She gives him head
the
forever.
Head is implied.
Sanctioned by his wife. Yeah. Totally.
Under death.
His wife's last words are, anyone can suck you off and you don't have to feel bad. Remember me. Just kidding, you don't have to.
Even if it was before I died, it's all good though.
She does give him head in the sense that she gives him a disguise, a fake head.
She gives him a head.
She gives him head.
Or a Hasidic Jew disguise.
Right. And he goes around fighting crime in a disguise, like a makeup disguise.
Wait, he does?
Yes.
I couldn't get past the part when it was just sort of like, it's about this fictional president. But you're saying he becomes a superhero? And that's why the president is missing?
So there are cyber terrorists, obviously.
Who, cyber hacker.
Yeah.
Hacker. Zeros, ones. AI.
They want to take down America with a looming internet virus that is called Dark Ages.
This is why old men can't write about computers.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. So he decides that the only person who can stop this is him as president for some reason.
A man with no experience fighting cybercrime.
Right.
He's like, I know I have Windows 95, but this seems like a job for me.
Yeah.
Super producer Anna Hosnier, while we were discussing this, sent me a wonderful GIF of President Clinton sitting at a computer, looking at it and giving like a real confident thumbs up. I like computers.
Yeah. All right.
I understand this 100%.
Score. Brazzers is doing a free preview weekend.
3D pinball rules.
One of Lincoln Duncan's female advisors was, quote, publicly branded by a crude reference to oral sex.
Uh-oh.
Why do this? So, why volunteer yourself? Like
fact.
This?
And then he seemed taken aback when he was on this book tour. And
in 2018,
NBC was like, hey, man, so let's talk about the Lewinsky thing, maybe. Like, have you apologized to her?
This interaction is interesting. He goes, I've apologized to everybody in the world.
Right. He said yes and was hoping like they would leave it at that. And he was like, wait, so you've really like talked to her one-on-one? He was like, no.
I have not talked to her.
I apologize to everyone.
In the world.
When I apologize. Yeah. And then he was like, I did a public apology. It was just, he got real testy. He was like, should JFK apologize? Should Lyndon Johnson apologize? He's like, way to throw the other presidents under the bus.
But also, asshole, you wrote a book where your wife died and it's cool to fuck around now. Right. And
you straight up murdered Hillary, page 3.
Right.
Like, they're, this.
I'd imagine, what if the book starts off on her deathbed?
Beep.
Like a breathing machine can be heard in the background.
They
like,
just get the important business out of the way first.
The subtle hum of life support equipment.
Also, he's president and awesome at everything.
Then the nurse came in and said, I'm so sorry. Do you want to hook up? You're so hot, Mr. President. I said, I guess so. My wife said it's cool.
She was pregnant. they're as goofy. Like, this story is so... Like, he is just so clueless, and like, of course he's volunteering himself for this question. How does he not see it coming? But also, it seems like a kind of a common view among like men who have like done something like this to a woman. There's a great piece Monica Lewinsky wrote earlier, I think it was this year, in Vanity Fair that sort of harkens to this. But like someone who is like done wrong against a woman, apologizing publicly makes it so that you don't have to apologize privately, which is so such an insane thing. And I think like even on a way smaller scale, like that thought process prevails of like, well, if I release a statement, that's basically the same thing as
the most personal act possible, releasing a statement.
Exactly.
Like written by your fucking publicist.
I mean, I had an experience like that myself where it was just like, I was never apologized to, but there was like, someone was like, hey, everybody, I did it and my bad, but it's
Jesus
just like,
that doesn't absolve you. Yeah. Yeah.
It's PR. Right. It's not being a person.
I'm sorry that happened. That's fucking awful.
You know, I am certainly not alone there. Yeah.
That's kind of really heartbreaking to hear, actually. Just for him to even, I think the logic that he even uses, or maybe these men use, is sort of like, well, I apologize and they probably heard it. Therefore, it's a personal apology that I did publicly. I looked into a camera and if she was looking at the screen, then I would be looking into her eyes. So yes, did I apologize? No.
Do it. I think that he does believe that? Yes, but I also do believe that, you know, deep down he knows he's being a fucking coward and has been a coward for 20 years.
Well, yeah, that's why
he
gets testy when people really press him on.
Right.
Here's what I think he is the best example of the fact that, you know how they say that the average intelligence in a cult is actually above average? Like, they tend to be smarter, and it's because smart people can argue themselves into believing anything.
Right.
I think Clinton is the perfect example of that, in that he can argue himself into being right in any situation because he's got this, like, incredible analytical, you know, lawyer's mind. Mm-hmm. And so he's just, I don't think he's felt guilt about anything in years,
right.
Decades.
And I was like, yeah, I can write this book about killing people with my super cum. Fucking ruined her dress.
So in this piece that Monica Lewinsky wrote, it's interesting because she's talking about how this came out in March. She's talking about how around New Year's, this past New Year's, she ran into Ken Starr at a restaurant. And that was like the first time she'd ever met him. And he like sort of apologized to her, but it was very awkward. And it's just like
weird.
The fact that you have to accidentally run into someone 20 years later to get a sort of apology.
Yeah.
And even then he was like, yeah, weird time, wasn't it? You know,
crazy,
and like
yeah.
Still couldn't fully commit to an apology.
Right.
It's just like, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. Do you want some of my bloomin' onion?
Right.
Yeah. Make up for
they
it?
Were definitely at Outback, yeah. For sure.
They were
like,
sure.
I picture Ken Starr always eating an Outback or a Sizzler. I don't know. I feel like
oh,
Michael Lynch gets better
Chili's.
Taste. Oh, wow.
I thought he's like, it's Marg Monday.
Marg Money's.
Pop in, get a $6 Marg, and I'll really think about the shit I've done in the past.
Yeah.
I do want to just stop here and say that the Outback Steakhouse chicken wings are good.
Okay.
Wow. Underrated.
Hashtag ad.
Okay.
Hashtag ad. Hashtag we weren't even paid for it. Hashtag where's my money?
Sorry.
Outback Steakhouse.
I'm
hashtag
just
me
I
too.
Just want to hear from other people.
Oh, God. Know
I felt like this was the perfect time to give them a plug. The older I get, the crazier it is to me that America turned on a 22-year-old girl, like 22 is so fucking young.
Oh yeah,
it's insane.
But that shows you how far we've come too. Where like, if someone tried to pull that kind of shit now, people at least have most people have the wherewithal to be like, whoa, easy here. What are you trying to say? How are you trying to spin this on this person?
Yeah.
Yeah. But
right.
I'm glad that Clinton comes out of this one looking like a fucking moron. And I hope no one buys his book.
No, just watch the clip. We'll have it in the footnotes because you'll see him start sweating a little bit.
I also think that James Patterson, I believe, yes, James Patterson, so he's written like a million books. But my favorite book, I was saying I used to work at a bookstore, and he rolled through once for the debut of his book, Rogue Lawyer, which is maybe one of the worst books of all time. Literally on the last page, it's like, I couldn't be a regular lawyer. I am rogue lawyer. I'm not like the other rogue lawyers.
The Larry H. Parker story.
I hope he says objection, Your Honor, before shooting somebody at some point.
Oh, no, it's John Grisham. Never mind. Never mind.
Cut that
come
out.
On.
Rogue lawyer. Anyways, hashtag ad rogue lawyer came out in 2015.
That is the John Grisham book that you would write, like, once John Grisham just starts farming it out to a ghostwriter,
right?
Like, who's just knows that. All right, what's the most John Grisham book you can write that John Grisham hasn't written yet? Rogue Lawyer,
pulled from a word cloud, yeah,
right, exactly. Fuck. In better news, an FBI agent accidentally shot a gun while doing a backflip on a dance floor. At a bar, and
yo,
it's a great video that everybody should just go out and
you
watch.
Gotta watch it, because
treat
this,
yourself.
This guy doing a little stanky leg. He's like, literally the dance floor is like cleared out for him to like just get low with it. And he's really, you know, he has some honey in his hips, I won't lie. This all happened about 12:45 on a Saturday night at the Mile High Spirits Distillery and Tasting Bar in downtown Denver. And your boy, just after he realized he got everybody's attention, he's doing all his little thotty moves. He does a backflip, and his fucking gun comes out and falls on the floor. And then he goes to pick it up. The gun goes off, and it hit a man in the leg. So
man's going to be fine.
which is why it is okay for this to be the funniest video.
Not life-threatening injury. Who knows? I mean, again.
And wasn't he like, oh, my bad. Like, the video, like it was like no big deal.
You see this shit go off and he like puts it back and he just sort of like puts his hands up like, we're good, like, we're good.
Yo, that was crazy, right?
Yeah, he's like, that backflip was crazy though, right? Like, no,
he's
my
like,
guy shot
anyways, anyone single here? You're just right. Like, you just shot someone.
By the way, one of the most irresponsible movie myths that we ever debunked at Cracked is the idea that if you drop a gun it and it off. Hits the ground, it will go off, because the way that guns like actually kill people when they fall is if you try to catch it or try and pick it up too quick because you're worried it's going to go off.
Oh, and you hit, you actually
and then you
the
pull
trigger.
The trigger.
Wait,
but
like
guns
a gun
will
can't
not
land
go.
On a trigger, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And they're designed specifically not to.
Well, it's all because of your favorite director, James Cameron, in True Lies.
Yes.
Jam Camp. When Jamie Lee Curtis come around with that Uzi, like, get the fuck out, and she drops it and smokes
it
the whole warehouse.
A room full of people.
Crimson Jihad got fucked up.
I think that video goes perfectly with what we were talking about on Friday, where cops have no game.
Right,
they just
exactly.
have no game.
Cut to this, like, off-duty FBI agent being like, let me do a backflip with a fucking gun in my waist. Like, right. All right, Cheddar Bob.
Jamie, as always, what a pleasure it's been having you.
It's good to have the gang back together.
Yeah, am I right? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter.com at JamieLoftusHelp and on Instagram at JamieChristSuperstar.
I highly recommend both.
Oh, and listen to the Bechdel cast every Thursday.
Please do. Yes. I highly recommend all three of those things. Miles, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. Thank you.
You can find me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song that we ride out. Miles, what's that going to be today?
Okay, so over the weekend, I was talking to some people, and they put me on to this band, Homeshake, which I kind of heard about because it's like a solo project of Mac DeMarco's former guitar player, this guy Peter. So this is a track from Homeshake called Give It To Me, and I think you're going to like it. I think you're gonna enjoy this little jam coming out of Canada. You know, it's got vibes. It's vibe.
All right, we're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Give it to me. Give it to me. Give it to me.